You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters Live. These podcasts explore the future of food and nutrition, featuring the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries from across the food industry who are going to change our world. We like to dig deep, and we like to question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and I'm a gastronaut. Today, we're continuing our series looking at one of the most interesting ingredients of recent times, CBD, or cannabidiol. For anyone who's somehow missed the rising success of CBD, it's an extract of hemp or cannabis, which has found a welcome home here in the UK's food and drink sector. In a previous episode, we looked at its neurological effects and its use in pain control, and we looked at the distinction between its use as a medicine and as a supplement, and the legal issues surrounding its use as a supplement in food and drink. Today is all about the food and drink sector. If you want to dip your toe in, join the CBD ice cream makers, energy bar producers, and so on, where should you start? Working out which products might succeed and marketing to interested customers is quite a challenge. So to explore the trends and consumer understanding of this new sector, I'm joined by Lauren Lovett, founder of Plant Academy. Hello there, Lauren.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much for joining us. And we've got Dave Gibson, founder of Gibson's Goodology. Hello there, Dave.
Good morning. How are you?
Really good. And thank you so much for joining us. So first of all, I just thought, why not just give us a one pitch sentence for your main project. So Lauren, give us the one sentence pitch for Plant Academy.
So Plant Academy is a now online cookery school teaching the best in plant-based food and using cutting edge ingredients to really inspire the next generation of chefs.
Fantastic. Okay. And Dave, tell us about Gibson's Goodology.
Yeah, you were right. There were so many choices to go with when we were planning on how to put the CBD in which product. And we decided to make the most delicious drink in the world. That's how we wanted to deliver the CBD supplement.
Nice. Very good. I'm loving your work there. Okay. So let's talk about how your interest in CBD evolved, really. David, when did you first come across it and where?
Well, actually, CBD was more of a later stage plant-based product that I started to work with. I think it was probably 7-8 years ago when all my friends started to go into the cannabis industry in Canada, because that's where I'm from. And I had one friend who just walked into my door in London and said, Gibson, we're going green. And then I got really excited about it because it was that first time that an ingredient caused such a stir in terms of categories. All of a sudden, with just this one plant, you could become a farmer, you could become a processor, you could become a services related person in the cannabis industry, or you could become a brand. And living in England for 21 years, I decided I wanted to be really, really close to the customer. And CBD was really the only game in town. THC was still very far from being legalized. So yeah, I chose CBD to really make that mark in the cannabis industry.
And was it a swift move? I mean, it sounds like you were pretty decisive about it.
No, it was not a swift move at all. You mentioned earlier on the call, there's so many shiny objects that you can choose from. And originally, we wanted to buy a small company with about 20,000 followers and a big Facebook group in the cannabis world in the UK. But then we decided with my Michelin star mixologist friend to just keep it simple, keep it focused, and create those drinks. Just like you get your vitamin C supplement from orange juice and it tastes delicious, we decided to just go really, really deep on creating that beautiful beverage with high dosage and amazing stability and all the science that goes with that difficult little molecule to work with.
Okay, so Lauren, tell me about your relationship with CBD and where you first came across it.
So I was just thinking back, and I think it was about 5 years ago. I was actually also in the States, in New York, and I remember just being really taken aback by the way that it seemed like you couldn't get a coffee without CBD in it. It was like on every corner. Everyone was kind of going wild for it. I think during that time, I must have attended so many different kind of like CBD conferences. They were like left, right, and center with different brands, and lots of people even using CBD for their pets. And I was just like, wow. Like, I obviously started kind of like using it, trying different brands. And then at the time, I was actually in New York as part of my chef training, and I started to use it in food, and that's where it got really interesting. So when I came back to London and opened my own concept, like restaurant and cookery school here, when we had a like in-person space, then I started to kind of really use it in food. And it was the one thing that people just really, really remembered and hadn't really seen before at that time. It felt really exciting and it really sparked a lot of ideas. And from that, working with different brands, it's always been something that people are very much intrigued by and want to learn more about, but definitely don't necessarily know how to cook with it yet.
Yeah. Now, you've just written a book. Here is your opportunity for a big fat plug. Tell us about Mind Food.
Well, so Mind Food, really mental health and food was where my whole food kind of journey started. And after studying something totally different, I wanted to retrain as a chef, specifically in plant-based food. And Mind Food really came about by my own experience trying to understand how I could eat and cook to really feed my mind. So after years of various experiences with people around me and myself with different mental health issues, I started to really explore these new ingredients, and it unlocked everything for me. Like, after doing 5 years in art and fashion, I immediately retrained and then started to discover these ingredients.
When you say unlocked, can you give me some specifics?
Yeah, of course. So it was at the time before the kind of like wellness scene we know now was really booming, but it was just about emerging. So things like hemp, avocados, goji berries, those ingredients I don't remember seeing when I was a kid. I didn't grow up with them. I certainly wasn't familiar with them. And it felt so new and exciting. And then more and more information was coming out about their benefits too. So I could really start to craft this new way of sort of eating almost. And it turned into, at the time, I wrote a sort of trend analysis book as part of my fashion degree, all about rebranding mental health with a trend towards wellness. And then that's literally been my handbook for the last almost 10 years, and now finally has become a book in its own right, which is Mind Food, coming out, yeah, online today and next month as a hardback. So
excellent. Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
That's really exciting. So Lauren found the inspiration for this in New York. Dave, you're Canadian, and you're saying that obviously lots of people about 7 or 8 years
British
ago.
British Canadian.
Okay. Well, very good. Very good. And the inspiration came from Canada, where the changes in cannabis laws have been really interesting. But the UK has become a pretty good market for CBD, hasn't it? Why do you think that is? What is it about the UK market and UK consumers that's enabled this to happen?
Yeah, I mean, first off, it's CBD, not THC. THC is the psychoactive part of the plant, and CBD is the wellness. Think Gwyneth Paltrow for CBD, and think, I don't know. Canada had a real point to prove, and they had to regulate the heck out of the market to really set the precedent and set the benchmark for this new plant that's been illegal because of the United States since 1920s, around there. But the UK went a different route. The UK allowed CBD, as it is a wellness product, to go through all the entree, all the restaurants, all the bars, all the stores. So we had a lot more retailers being open to buying it and giving it to the consumers. So the accessibility is really good for the consumers in the UK, but we haven't even scratched the surface. We're in Selfridges. I do sampling myself in Selfridges because being close to the customer is so important for us. And there's still a huge amount of a lack of knowledge around CBD. And a large reason is because we're still not allowed to market or communicate about it freely on Facebook or Google, that owns 70% of the internet, because it's not federalized in the United States, and Google and Facebook are American companies.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you're able to buy it in the UK, but still it's not getting as good of traction as we were hoping for.
That's really interesting. So the opportunity is big, but the channels to communicate that are complex. And how do you go about coping with that?
I mean, creatively. I mean, tasting is believing, right? So, I mean, a key part of ours is that guerrilla marketing and education, being on the streets, being in the stores, creating other communication channels that aren't in that 70% of the internet. It's really challenging. You know, most companies get a 2.3 times ROI on their online marketing spend. I would be satisfied with a 1.6, 1.8 times ROI on our online spend, but we're not even there. We're lucky to get 1 for 1 online spend. So
that's really complex for a young company as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's difficult. You got to be a lot really creative. We were supposed to legalize it. I mean, Biden had a mandate to give it to Harris before Christmas in 2021, in time to to legalize it federally for the midterm elections. But, you know, with this pandemic pushing cannabis down on the priority list in the United States, once again, we're not federalizing in the United States. So we have to wait probably another at least 2 to 3 years before Google and Facebook open up, unfortunately.
And these are things that are complexities that only really crop up once you're in the thick of marketing your product, I guess.
Dead right.
Now, we're in the middle of January recording this. This is the 18th of January. And I wonder, Dave, is this a particular... I mean, we're talking about dry January, is people thinking more about health and wellness around this time of year. Do you already have any statistics about how well products are doing right now? Middle of January 2022.
Yeah, I mean, no, statistics are not available from retailers. It's very difficult to aggregate those statistics. Our online sales are up in January, but that's a very small sample.
Okay, so early days, we're not quite sure how well we're doing at this time of year. Okay, now, Lauren, this is one of the fastest growing well-being product categories in the UK. It's worth more than the vitamin C and D market combined, expected to be worth £1 billion by 2025. From your point of view, when you're looking at this as an ingredient used in lots of different things, where do you see the exciting areas? Where is the demand from consumers, you know, focused?
Well, I think the thing that I've seen, obviously, like being, I mean, exactly as Dave was saying, there's so many times when I've come to really, you know, whether it's at a supper club or I'm teaching or anything, there's so much kind of, oh yeah, I know what CBD is, like they know kind of what it is, but there's this kind of, yeah, people are still very unaware of exactly some, often the benefits, the like exact benefits, and also, you know, how to really use it apart from just taking it under your tongue. And I think, you know, we're seeing more and more like, you know, cocktail bars using it as, you know, a primary ingredient, and also restaurants. There was a place down in Brighton called the Canna Kitchen at one point, which it was such a, you know, major thing in what's their whole concept, really, yeah, using CBD. So people are wanting, I think, to use it more in edible things. I mean, whether that's kind of chocolate bars, products, I mean, there are a lot out there. But exactly as Dave was saying, I think there's this thing of like, it's kind of, oh yeah, I want to try that, but there's not the awareness specifically why and then how to actually use it for themselves. And the primary thing that I noticed teaching classes, especially at places like, I also teach at Leith's, which has a really traditional curriculum compared to what we teach, which is a bit more, you know, future forward and trend predicting with Plant Academy. Yeah, people are a little bit frightened to actually use it confidently and not to give people like an overdose of CBD. They're like, oh, how much would I use? So I think the thing I'm really noticing is seeing it in products as with a little bit of sort of education on the packaging, like something that people can actually grasp onto and understand.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is also seeing it more and more in cosmetics. So there's a brand that I work with, Good Hemp, and they've just bought out a CBD balm, and they're a very interesting brand because they do make hemp and hemp products very accessible, and they're very, very good at communicating, you know, like why we use hemp and also CBD and all of those things. So I think the education piece is a huge one.
And, you know, people just on that too, people really love it when they start to try it. Like one of the things that keep us going every day are the letters and the emails from people saying it's helped with our knee, it's helped with our sleep, it's helped with our anxiety, it's helped with our headaches, it's helped. I mean, that's what keeps us going. The UK government recommends 70 milligrams a day. Right now, products that we're seeing like chocolate bars are lower than that. So we still have a way to go for the public to use more of it at 70 milligrams a day. And that $1 billion worth of growth statistic that you mentioned is out of date. I know the guys that put those numbers together, and that was done a year to 2 years. And there were two specific reports associated to that 2025 forecast. And things didn't happen the way they should have. The Food Standards Authority and EU still have not approved the CBD products. The 200 different licenses were one of them that are with the European FSA. They're super late for getting this approved. And that means big retailers aren't accepting our products into their stores like Whole Foods, Dalesford. So that's one thing. The FSA is slow, very slow. Google and Facebook should have federalized. That's not going to happen this term. So that 2025 $1 billion of growth is an outdated number.
Mm, That's really interesting. Yeah, we discuss a lot about the how slow the FSA is to approve and the complexities of leaving the EU and novel foods issues. And that's in our previous episodes. If you haven't heard that, take a little listen to that. We discussed the legislation about that. Yeah.
Right.
Now, what I'm interested in, to put that aside for a second, is the use of CBD in alcohol and non-alcoholic spirits, which I think has become, as Lauren mentioned, a big boom area. Now, this, in a sense, Dave, do you think that this is a sort of a statement of intent or a statement of romance in a way for a brand? Are people just invoking the concept of CBD as a way of saying we're a bit different, we're a bit new, we're a bit naughty, possibly. We're trying something. It implies a whole world of different inferences, doesn't it?
It really does. The alcohol versus no alcohol and mixing with cannabis is a big one. It's a huge one. Look, alcohol and the wellness product of CBD do not go together. It's complete antithesis of each other, right? So this trend, this novel trend that popped up with mixing CBD with alcohol was probably a legacy from mixing THC with alcohol, right? But the wellness product and alcohol are complete polar opposites of each other and really have no reason to be mixed. The NOLO, the no alcohol evolution of CBD is big. And that's really where we're talking a proper a sober sommelier, no alcohol drink with CBD as a replacement for non-drinkers is reality. And we're seeing it more and more on restaurant menus in the UK under the non-alcoholic drinks. And people are really liking it right now in restaurants and bars. So yeah, I think this CBD delicious way to consume a CBD wellness supplement is here to stay.
Hi there, only me. I just want to break into the conversation to say that if you're enjoying this episode, then once it's finished, you might want to check out another one called Flavor, Is It All in the Mind? You can search for it on our website at foodmatterslive.com. We look at what tricks can be used to enhance flavor, and we do a test to see if I'm a super taster. Now, back to the chat. Now let's get down to the nuts and bolts of this, the actual use of the product itself. Now, Lauren, CBD, you've used it in cooking, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I use it in recipes, yeah.
Now, I haven't tasted it neat at all, but is it true that it has a slightly bitter taste to it? And we're seeing it in lots of sweet products now, ice creams and bars, lots of sweeter things where you know, the basic principle of taste is that sweetness ought to mask bitterness. But I guess it's more complex than that. Can you tell us a bit more about the taste and about the actual chemistry of combining it in food?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it really varies from brand to brand. And Dave might have more about exactly how it's made, but from what I believe, it's more, if you use the stalks in the CBD, it can make it more bitter. So different brands can use obviously different parts of the plant, and then that can really affect the taste. And I know when trying, especially in that time, those times in New York, trying so many different brands, and there were some that, you know, really just tasted of either like hemp oil, olive oil, whatever carrier oil they're using, and other brands that are much more, they might be like a slightly lower cost product or similar, but they're much more bitter and strong, and do, you know, if you put that under your tongue as a first time consumer, you might be like a little bit, you know, it's a different taste, or especially if you put it in your coffee, you might be very surprised.
Can you put any more words to the taste sensation?
The bitterness. Yeah, it's like a very sort of like deep, bitter, grassy taste. So it's kind of something that, you know, say if you do have a coffee as a prime example, if you put that sort of CBD in there, it can be like definitely send it to the more kind of like earthy, grassy taste that you wouldn't expect. Whereas when there's a particular brand I love that is actually in France called Hokaran, and it's got a very sort of neutral taste. It's a French brand that's been alive for a very long time. They even use hemp as the packaging on, like, the box is made of hemp. It's like very beautiful, and they make lots of different sort of cosmetics and products as well. And I actually developed the food concept for the first plant-based hotel in Paris, Hoy, and they do CBD massages and treatments, and we use Hokoran on the menu throughout the whole menu. So a prime example of actually how to use it, and obviously over there I am using Hokoran as it's quite a neutral tasting CBD, so putting a few drops of that in your matcha latte or something, which is very popular, especially in those kind of concepts, then you really don't notice it. But if I do or have in the past worked with more earthy brands, then definitely hiding it in things like chocolate, or even I'll make lots of kind of raw desserts. It's key that you don't heat the CBD too much. It's better to use it in, like, I tend to use it in dressings or raw desserts or anything that I'm just gonna, you know, not make really, really hot. But chocolate is where it's always most popular. So we do things like chocolate cheesecakes, where you'll have like a water ganache, which is like naturally sweet with a nice raw chocolate. Use the CBD there once the ganache is cooling, and it just really ripples through. I love to play around with using also hemp in the rest of whatever dish I'm making. So for example, the chocolate ganache cheesecake, I would use some hemp seeds in the base with gluten-free oats, maybe some cardamom, you know, something that's just going to still show that it's hemp. I think it's important to tell the story, which is always what I do when I'm, whether I'm designing dishes or teaching. I mean, it's not hiding a product, it's showing like this is, you know, this is what it's about, and trying to communicate that. So yeah, but it can also be used in things like salad dressings, like hemp oil, a few drops of CBD, maybe mixing that with some miso pomegranate molasses and using that on like any sort of salad. But it's a really versatile ingredient. And if you ever have tried just pure hemp oil, then CBD often can, you know, really goes with obviously that kind of flavor profile.
Okay, now Dave, you will have gone through a whole series of iterations of tasting for your products now. Can you tell us a bit about that journey and the sort of the mistakes that you can make with CBD as much as the successes?
Oh my gosh, sure I can. First off, CBD, she is a very finicky molecule who does not like heat, light, time, air. We found out that she does not like the inside of can liners. She likes to absorb in specific can liners. Mm. If you use too much of it, you can get an aftertaste that you have in the back of your palate, in the back of your tongue, which can linger for about an hour. She likes to sink to the bottom of drinks. So you have to find really intelligent ways to work with the molecule to bind it to other molecules in the drink so that it's consistent. It's not like making an alcohol where you have a percentage of alcohol running through the whole drink. What else doesn't she like? It's very difficult. It's so problematic to work with. Companies like Constellation, companies like Molson Coors, companies like AB InBev, you know, the Hexo Molson Coors example in Canada, they spent $200 million on making a drinks range. That is far beyond any other drinks company. And the reason is because of that molecule, is how it reacts to time, is react to other properties in the drink. Does it react to the acidity of the lemon, for example? We had to go through tens of thousands of pounds of testing and retesting and retesting. You know, a lot of drinks companies only take 2, 3, 4 times of trials, but we took far beyond that. The R&D, we got two R&D tax credits back from the government because of the novel work that we put into this. Because as far as I'm concerned, nobody else has tried to work with a tea, a lemon, an agave, and a little bit of juice and the CBD isolate. It was far beyond our expectations for difficulty levels to work with.
So that the nuts and bolts of putting the drink together are one thing. Now I guess we need to really talk about the things that are holding you back. Now we talked a lot in our last episode about legislation and regulation in this sector, so I don't want to go too far into it, but this is important, isn't it, for a brand? And I wondered, is this, do you think, the biggest challenge that both of you face? So, Lauren, is it the acceptance of CBD as a product, or is there a sort of, again, a romance around that as it being a problem?
Well, I think, I mean, there definitely is a way to go. I mean, as we've kind of touched on today, there is this kind of like, you know, so much of the legislation, you know, doesn't add up. It's not where it needs to be. But I think from a consumer perspective, I think there's something very nuanced and quirky that does draw people in. Obviously, that's always something when you see it in kind of, you know, events, pop-ups, restaurants, it's going to be something that people are like, oh, that's so kind of cool. It's slightly edgy, like whatever connotations that has, which makes it exciting. But I do think, I mean, coming at it from a more mental health benefit perspective, which is, I mean, I think why these products are so exciting and important, because it's a gateway for people to being like, wow, CBD can actually help me with these issues, which is really what it's all about. And I think that, you know, that's where it's building up that confidence, but also showing people the true potential. And once people can actually see, like, you know, okay, I can have these products, it's cool, I go to a supper club, I'll try CBD in my dessert, great. But actually it's like, oh, did you know actually this really helps with sleep, it helps with so many of these pain issues. And by one person getting that message and passing it on to someone else, that's where the power is. And at the moment I see so many people that come to experiences and classes that there's always one person that's got it. They're like, I've used it for this, I've given it to someone, it has worked. And, you know, everyone really then, you know, they fly on that confidence, and that's where it's amazing. But obviously it's a very small percentage of people that are really there and feeling super confident about that, and also using it to its true potential. It's like, okay, I'm really struggling to sleep at the moment, maybe I'm feeling super anxious about something coming, lean on CBD, like dose up on different drinks, explore what's out there. And I think that that's where it needs to catch up, so that that kind of awareness is transparent and people really know those things.
And Dave, I mean, you're clearly a lovely guy with lots of people's well-being at your core, but I sense a pent-up frustration there, and I'd like to give you a moment to vent your not anger, because you don't look like an angry guy, but vent your frustrations. What are the things holding you back? You've alluded to a few of them. Go on, give it all barrels.
Okay. All barrels. Look, this is one of the few times that I've seen where no matter what a company does, no matter how consumer-centric you are, no matter the product you make and every move you do, you're still hamstrung and you're still restricted by the things you mentioned. I'm restricted by the FSA. I'm restricted by the US government. I'm restricted by Facebook and Google. I'm restricted by the big retailers in the UK who are still waiting for FSA approval. So there's a lot of things around things that are out of my control. That Lauren was mentioning all the different use cases. I mean, we're still in the journey where people are deciding when to take CBD. Is it good for coffee or tea replacement? Is it good for some morning anxiety? Is it good for post lunch? Is it good for a social occasion to replace alcohol? Is it good for pre-yoga? Is it good for post-yoga? So that's time of day. And then you're looking at what uses there are. And people are still really trying to find their feet with it. And it's slower than we anticipated, again, due to us not being able to educate the public, right? I expect in Canada, for example, that there's a huge shift for the wellness community going to CBD. But right now, 85, 90% of the market in Canada is still THC-based. And they're still just looking at the strongest form of THC rather than specific strains of THC, like a sativa, like an indica. They're just saying, cannabis, strong, let's buy it, rather than getting into the specificity of the specific offerings out there. So people getting educated is slow due to our bottleneck of governments and legislation, and retail onboarding is slow due to our legislation onboarding of approvals. So yeah, overall, it's just a trickle down effect to the customer.
And that's really tough for a new company trying to make waves, especially when you're just, you know, the novel foods issues are hellish. A very tangential question here. If legislation meant that you could put THC in drinks, would you consider bringing out a different brand or adding it to some of your drinks?
We have considered that, actually. People were advising me in Canada to go CBD because THC is the prize in the UK. But the more I got into it, the more I realized that both THC and CBD are completely different consumer sects, which would require completely different communications, completely different marketing budgets, and completely different sales approaches. So you're right. Would you start up another brand? I think you would have to. One of my investors once mentioned, if THC ever became legal, why don't you create a brand called Gibson's Badology? or something naughty, Gibson's naughtiness. You know, we still have so much work in terms of the education piece, in terms of the getting people to try and work it into their regular life with the CBD molecule, that we have so much time and so much money needed to be spent on just that. So for me, the answer would be no THC for now. We're busy enough with CBD.
Hmm. Although, let's face it, you will have the expertise of dealing with all of those hurdles. So you'd be prime place to use it.
Okay. And, you know, in North America, I would be happy to look at swapping this molecule, the CBD molecule, in with the THC molecule, and just doing a pure THC play in North America. But the UK, we're on track for just CBD. But there is that optionality in North America for sure.
Hi there, only me. I just want to break into the conversation to say that if plant-based food is your area of interest, Food Matters Live is hosting a series of online masterclasses which might interest you. The first is called How to Communicate the Why of Healthy Plant-Based Diets and Products, and it's taking place on the 3rd of March. The second, Launching a Plant-Based Brand from Niche to Opportunity, is on the 15th of March. You can find out more and book your tickets at foodmatterslive.com. Now, back to the chat. Okay, last question for both of you. Can you tell us about a product or a bit of research or a tool that points the way forwards? What does the future look like, and is there something that's going to help you do it? So, Lauren, you know, is it a bit of technology? Is it a cooking process, or is it one of the brands that you've mentioned already? What is it that is going to help the future of CBD and your use of it?
Obviously, coming at it from this kind of like, you know, actually user perspective and how much it has helped and can help people, I think that, and exactly as Dave said, it's like, where does this go in our routines? Like, how do we do this? And I think, I mean, obviously with the book and everything, but it really is about showing people the possibilities of like fitting it into their routines and just making it such a kind of commonplace, easy to use thing. And I think that, you know, there's obviously going to be like different technology, different products. There's so many things out there. But I think actually to kind of implement it into our lives and make it realistic and actionable, then it's like these kind of, you know, real conversations and even these viral recipes that literally show people like, oh, I'm going to like use it in my nut butter. I'm going to use it on my breakfast every day. Or, you know, CBD matcha is such a thing. It's amazing to put CBD in matcha. And obviously the matcha trend is huge. So it's, you know, I think it's those kind of things that are going to make a difference, not necessarily at the kind of like development product level, but actually to implement it into society and really, you know, get consumers to the place they need to be, which I think would then have that knock-on effect to everyone else. So I think, you know, chefs championing these things, obviously like influencers, different things, but really those kind of ideas that can really stick, that people can say, yeah, I can do that thing, I'm going to build it in, it's my daily ritual, done. And then it's going to, that those are things. So I know, I mean, from a really personal perspective, but that's really what happened with me. I literally use it, especially originally in hot drinks, and it's so easy to just do that every day, like when you're making something. So yeah, I think more recipes, more kind of ideas, inspiration, and really people just trailblazing the way to kind of show people what's possible.
Yeah. So Lauren reckons just getting on with it and doing it. Dave, is there any particular ingredient, tool that you're not allowed to say legislation? We've done the legislation bit. What would you say is the thing that will help you for opening up future opportunities?
Look, I started this because I just wanted transparency in the industry, right? I wanted to create a product that what was in the can was on the label, right? Transparency of labeling. And I still, what most excites me about this industry and the future opportunities is the same things that the reason that why we got into this. We want a stable product. We want high and consistent dosage, consistency of dosage, and that consumers get what they bought. on the can. That's what I want. I just want transparency and consistency of dosage.
Yeah, that sounds like a very, very reasonable request. Yeah. And I guess that's about the maturity of the industry. And when it comes, I guess, hopefully these things will fall into place. Well, Lauren Lovett and Dave Gibson, good luck with your projects. And I really look forward to talking to you again in the near future to find out how things are progressing. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for having
me. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, there are plenty more like it. We've now published more than 200 editions of Table Talk, exploring the whole landscape of the food industry. You can find them all at foodmatterslive.com. For example, if you go to the site and search CBD, you'll find the first episode in this series where we looked in a bit more detail at the effects of CBD and the regulations producers are facing. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. Thanks so much for listening.